Welcome to the Fastcast. I'm Slowpoke number one, John Nicolaitis.
And I'm Slowpoke number two, David Chalande.
Nailed it twice.
Yes, we got it again. Those of you at home, we started this recording.
Yep.
But it is roughly this temperature of the surface of the sun in here right now. And John, in his dehydrated brain, brilliant wisdom.
Just starved for water, parched, traveling this audio desert.
Just surrounded by like a mirage of all of the things that we see in cartoons.
Listen, we've been recording for so long.
He started the recording, but didn't plug in the microphones. So that was we luckily caught that 10 minutes in rather than the full hour.
Don't round it up. It was 7.
I think
or
10
eight.
Was fine.
But yes, we did record some of it.
So
it's fine.
We're coming back at this for a second time. You're coming back at it for a first time. So welcome back to us, but welcome to the first time to you. John, what do you want to talk about on today's Fastcast?
Oh, the first thing we're going to talk about is Super Mario Odyssey.
Super Mario Odyssey!
Yay!
So a Switch game came out, and I got to play that.
I'm so sorry. Every time that someone at PAX mentioned their game was coming out at Switch, I just had to tell them, oh, my co-host would be so excited.
Yeah, it makes me feel a little bit awkward when you talk about me in a third person to other people. But,
drop a fact.
Yeah.
Anyway, keep going.
But, a major game came out for the Switch, and I played it. So I want to make it clear, there have been more major games coming out for the Switch than I have played, but this is one that I have played.
Doom just get released and Wolfenstein.
Not too long. Wolfenstein 2, Mario versus Rabbids was another big one.
Yeah.
Fun anecdote. The Ubisoft released some of their sales numbers, maybe not Ubisoft released them, but some Ubisoft sales numbers got published.
Mm-hmm.
And the Switch sales for any of the major games they released on the Switch were only like 2% lower than other consoles. And considering the console cycle and all that kind of thing, that's pretty good for something that's so underpowered compared to the PS4 or whatever.
It's like people just care about great gameplay experiences and graphics are a secondary.
It's kind of evidence that if you put the effort into marketing a game for a particular platform and not shortcutting it and making a shitty version, that it will sell, you know?
Funny about that.
Yeah.
If you make a complete game for something, people might play it.
Isn't it weird how you don't get the sales you expect when you don't do your job properly?
Yeah.
So, Super Mario Odyssey is pretty fucking good. Now, it's not quite as good, in my opinion, as everybody else seems to think it is, which is the best game ever released on any system for all things, and it's completely changed the way I look at my world, and also all of my body reversed in age by 20 years, and now I'm a young, fit man again, and I'm living life true to myself because of Mario Odyssey. It did everything. It's the best.
Yes, you are still wearing your Breath of the Wild t-shirt today.
So, and honestly, I think part of the reason my experience of Super Mario Odyssey was, like, you're joking around. I'm obviously not wearing a Breath of the Wild t-shirt.
No, he is.
But don't do that.
Okay, it's fine. It's a very nice orange t-shirt.
A little bit too orange, if anything. Part of the reason I think my experience of Super Mario Odyssey was a little bit lower than what other people experience is because I was expecting another Breath of the Wild. I was expecting a game to do to Mario what Breath of the Wild did to Zelda. And like playing Breath of the Wild totally reinvigorated my enthusiasm for open worlds generally because it approaches them so well and I just felt like exploring and all of that kind of thing.
That's impressive. Because the open world genre is so bloated and like I'm surprised anything could recharge somebody. Admittedly, I did enjoy Shadow of Mordor a lot.
That's exactly my point. You know, there are still some good ones out there. Breath of the Wild, the yardstick by which I judge all other open worlds right now.
Yeah.
And so I was expecting, you know, Mario to be something like that based on the way people were talking about it. Because I got it like sort of a week or so after it came out. Slowpokes, that's who we are.
week?
Look, honestly, in this case, it was PAX's fault, all right? Super Mario Odyssey launched during PAX Australia. Why would I buy it when I'm not going to have a chance to play it because I'm doing all my other PAX shit? But yeah, it's honestly really, really good. Another thing that I think tempered my experience of it is that I just didn't do the kingdom runs very well.
What do you
mean? Here are some of my biggest problems with Super Mario Odyssey.
All right?
And I want to make this clear. Lots of good shit too. I'm just starting with this because it helps contextualize the conversation. The music is only in loops of about 12 to 20 seconds for each level.
I thought you said 30 seconds before. 12 seconds.
It varies from kingdom to kingdom. Some of them might be 30. It feels short. The point is, it's not a minute or two. It's measured in seconds.
Yeah. If you're not, you have to be a mobile phone app game to have a loop that short. Or it's going to be the best music in the world.
Exactly, right?
Even good music gets tiring.
So there's a lot of kingdoms that have loops that I found very grating. And there are many kingdoms where I actually just kind of don't play any music at all, depending on, you know, if you get to a certain altitude, the music drops off and stuff like that. But it's surprisingly absent of music on the whole, like this whole game. When I played through it, like I said, I did a bad pacing of my kingdoms. So I started off with some of the early kingdoms are really good and they have really good music and they're really colorful and really bright. Mm-hmm. And it's got like the Super Mario Odyssey, like overture is the music for like the second kingdom you go to. And it's awesome.
Liedstrong.
But I played it so that I just got the core quest, and that got me enough moons to move on, so I just moved on.
Wait, the core quest?
So in each kingdom, the first time you visit it, they give you a core goal, and that'll be like a quest chain of like two or three things. So it'll be drop the bridge, talk to the guy, and then go to the top of the tower and fight the boss. So, you know, those are your three chains in the thing.
You think quest, and then my brain thinks of like Fallout and Skyrim and stuff.
Oh, right, yeah.
And now I'm just imagining
it's
Mario.
It's more of just like an objective marker.
Yeah, I just imagine Mario running around with an axe fighting dragons.
In the first few kingdoms, that core quest chain.
Yeah.
Is enough to get you enough moons to move on to the next kingdom, because you've got to get a certain amount. As you get to later kingdoms, you need to do more of the thing. So I did the first few kingdoms, and I was thinking, like, if I just do this core quest chain, that'll finish my tutorial or whatever, and then I'll be expected to come back to some of these places.
Yeah.
But I realized by the time I got to, like, the fourth kingdom, or third or fourth kingdom, that, oh, no, this is just how the game works. You just get this core quest chain to start with, and then you're supposed to spend as much time in a kingdom as you want. So I skipped some really good ones that had really good music.
Oopsie.
And then I stopped and decided to spend more time in a couple of the lower excitement kingdoms that are between these early showstopper cool kingdoms at the start and New Donk City, which is like your mid-game high point. And New Donk City is so good.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people talk about it. Wait, just quickly. This is the Mario game where there are like full-size people walking around.
Yes, and they walk around in New Donk City.
Oh, that's New Donk City.
Yeah.
Right. And I thought it was in a desert for some reason.
No. There's another level that's in a desert. You see a couple of people there, but generally the only place you see like regularly proportioned human beings than Mario proportioned characters is New Donk City. When you go to New Donk City, music is amazing. Mm-hmm. And this is another thing that I struggled with. The health is too low. So you get three hits and then you're dead, right?
And can you get the health back?
Yes. You can. So you can recover health by picking up hearts, but they're relatively rare.
They're not just like something, you know, in Zelda when you cut grass and stuff, hearts would appear or...
Yeah, but not as common as that makes it sound, right? So if you hit question mark blocks, they'll sometimes drop hearts. Sometimes enemies will drop hearts.
Okay.
But they're pretty few and far between. Honestly, I play most of the game in what's called assistive mode, where they give you six hearts as your default. And you can get over hearts, which bring you up to three over your default.
No.
But if you go to three or lower... then you're back. That's your new max at that point. So sure. I found it really tedious to just try and keep my health up. A lot of the jumps and stuff I had a bit of trouble with just because I'm not the world's greatest platformer.
Hmm.
My biggest problem is that Mario would jump and I think that he would be above an object that he was not above. He would be in front of it just because like just little stuff
the
like
proportion,
that.
Like
the, yeah, like the depth perception was something I struggled with.
Okay.
And you know, nobody else is complaining about that. So I think I just have to accept that that's me.
Yeah.
And it's the health thing as well. Nobody else is complaining about the health. I think this is just that I found the game challenging, which is part of the reason my experience of it was a bit lower.
Okay. Yeah.
I think the biggest issue was that I paced those early kingdoms very badly. And I spent some time in the more mediocre kingdoms with the more annoying soundtracks.
Yeah.
When I really should have spent a lot of time in Cascade Kingdom, which is like the first one, which is that awesome dinosaur one you see in all the trailers.
Oh, yeah.
And then New Donk City is also fucking awesome. And I think part of the reason I really like New Donk City is because unlike most kingdoms where you go in and do the core chain, which is pretty doable.
Yeah.
Then you can dick around in the world for a little bit to get more moons. And that's sort of your standard difficulty.
Yeah.
In New Donk City, you start with a big boss fight, right? So you go in, you do the big boss fight, and then there are no more enemies in that kingdom anymore. You just clear them out.
Oh.
And so New Donk City was awesome because I could just run around and hang out and like talk to people and solve their problems. I didn't have to worry so much about constantly avoiding enemies and like using my cap to, you know, get health back and capture guys to get around and all that kind of thing. It just felt like the chill, like in like a RPG, you've got like the hometown
where you're not
in danger. It felt like that. Like I was just able to do the Citadel in Mass Effect or whatever, where I'm not in trouble. I'm just solving people's problems.
Sure. I mean, can you not go back to previous worlds? Or?
Oh yeah, you definitely can. And when I decided to do that, I had a lot more fun because I went back to Cascade Kingdom and, you know, mind controlled the T-Rex and did all of that cool shit that was just a much more bright and colorful kingdom compared to some of the, like, there's this one kingdom, it's like a lost kingdom where the ship gets shot down.
Okay.
Yeah, like it happens more than once, but like the first one, you're in this kingdom that you don't choose to go to. It's like this overgrown forest and it's just got this very obnoxious music and the color palette is really weird. There's this edible stew kingdom.
Okay.
Right? So you go to the food kingdom, right? Because you always go to a food kingdom and stuff like this.
Sure.
But for whatever reason, they made the stew, which is all of the hot liquid that you can't touch, the ground hazard in this thing. They made it bubblegum pink.
Whoa.
And so I'm walking around this thing and I just feel really sticky all the time. And there's a lot of kingdoms, like I said, every game has this. It has high points and its low points. Yeah. And I just spent way too much time in the low points when I should have spent more time in the high points. But there's also just so much very clever design stuff as well. And there's thousands of videos on that. Maybe I'll link one of them in the description to this. But yeah, it is an impressive achievement and it's honestly very good and worth some fun.
I mean, it's great that it lets you go and play around with levels you like more than levels you go in and stuff like that.
And they kind of do it in two stages as well, right? So it's not really a spoiler, but some people might interpret it as such. You play the game and it's one of these games where the credits, so you go through, you visit all of the kingdoms and then you do the big boss fight and the credits roll.
Yep.
Right? That's halfway through the game.
Oh.
By doing that, you unlock a whole bunch of tier 2 moons. So a whole bunch of moons that were, like, you couldn't even see or interact with appear on all of the kingdoms. So you go back and these ones are much harder to get to. And a lot of them are confined to the little puzzle dungeons where you'll go down a pipe and have a specific, okay, you've got a platform across this using this particular capture mechanic to get across, right? So little portal style puzzle chamber type things.
Sure.
That's where most of those new moons come in.
Can you tell me something? What are these moons for? Like, I get that you use them to
power your ship. Yeah.
Is that it?
Well, yeah, the moons are a source of power. And so you use the moons to power the ship to chase after Bowser, who's going from kingdom to kingdom.
Okay.
And Bowser is stealing stuff from the kingdoms that he's going to use in his wedding to Peach. So he steals this awesome frosted cake and this awesome bouquet of flowers and this awesome wedding tuxedo and shit like that. And you're just trying to keep up with him.
Is there any other incentive apart from, you know, just the joy of collecting or?
Yeah, just the joy of collecting. Sure. And that makes it sound like it's less good than it is because there honestly is a lot of joy to just exploring the world and finding this stuff. For me, nowhere near what there was in Breath of the Wild, but a lot of other people are talking about them as being comparable. Where in Super Mario Odyssey, the worlds are all very condensed, right? In Breath of the Wild, it's a huge overworld that's bigger than the world in Skyrim or something. Whereas in this, you have these little kingdoms that are all about the size of they're not really any bigger than what they would have been in Super Mario 64, just in terms of square footage. And I think some of them might actually be smaller.
But they're just denser.
Yeah, and they're packed full of stuff. You're tripping over stuff a lot of the time.
Okay.
And honestly, for me, I actually felt a little bit cluttered sometimes. And I want to make this super, super clear. These are all my feelings, right? Everybody else is right in saying that this is an amazingly good game because it is an amazingly good game. I'm just not right up there with everyone else.
Yeah, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, like it's honestly, that's probably a good way to put it. Like a 7, 7.5 out of 10 if I was to give it a numeric score, if that was something that we were to do on this show.
Yeah, if that was important or valid or useful.
Yeah, it's a good game, worth the time. And honestly, it ends, like I say, it ends when you do the end of the story and you do that big climactic thing in the middle of the content of the game that is the end of the story. It's a strong ending.
Sure. I mean, you don't regret your time with it?
Not really. I mean, part of me thinks that if I bought it when it was a little bit cheaper, I would have gotten better value for money. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, it's at the upper end of that, breaching that not quite happy with what I spent on it's expensive, right? It's a new AAA title.
Yeah, and it's on a new system and everything. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I'm always a proponent for taking your time and waiting, but
I will say this though, because it is a Nintendo game and it is a platform seller. I mean, there's no way Breath of the Wild is any less than $70 in most places, right?
Yeah.
Even, you know, all this time after it coming out. Like, most Super likely, Mario Odyssey is going to be $70 for a year and a half.
That's a good point. I mean, they still sell Call of Duty at like $40, $50, and that's the fourth one. Like, Modern Warfare still sells for almost full price.
Yeah.
It's like, some games are just forever priced high.
Mm. And the thing is, it's nice to have something because of the nature of its dense exploration. You asked me how often I play Breath of the Wild in handheld mode. Yeah. It's a little bit harder to just pick up and play that game because things are a little bit further apart. If I've got 15 minutes, I can do something in Breath of the Wild, right? And the longer that game went on and I completed more and more stuff, that became less possible. I don't think I'm ever going to run out of stuff I can do in 15 minutes in Super Mario Odyssey. I will stop playing the game before I run out of stuff to do.
Yeah, it's not like you could pause halfway through the boss fight with Ganon or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And like, but even the main dungeons in Breath of the Wild, 30 minutes to 60 minutes, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that's even totally the biggest, longest stuff is still pick up and playable.
Yeah, I always think half an hour is that sweet spot.
Yeah, whereas in Super Mario Odyssey, if I picked up that game and played it for 10 minutes, I'd probably find 3 moons.
Yeah.
You know, like, because everything is so much closer together. So,
well,
pros and cons.
It sounds like having fun. It sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much done with it, yeah. But like I said, it'll be a good thing to have in my back pocket when I'm on a long train ride or something
that. I think the next thing we were going to talk about is EA buying Respawn.
Now, you tell me that Respawn are the Titanfall people, right?
Yes.
Cool. That is literally everything I know about them. I played Titanfall 1. It's a good game, but I know literally nothing else about Respawn.
The only reason I want to bring it up is EA has this reputation for buying studios and then just demolishing.
Dissolving them? Yeah,
dissolving them. And I read the CEO, I think it was the CEO's blog post about it and how it was kind of like,
no, the CEO of Respawn?
Of Respawn, yep. Yeah. And how they was basically like, look, it's just a financial thing. It's not we're not hungering for money. Honestly, no one's getting fired.
Titanfall
blah, blah.
Is a game I bought through Origin. Like, yeah. It shocks me that they weren't owned by EA already.
Yeah.
Like,
EA was the publisher, I'm pretty sure, for all yeah. their games. So, you know. And I don't know. EA does have a really bad reputation. And unfortunately, the Titanfall games have been poorly timed in their releases.
Regard?
One of the reasons is that they're always timed around other games.
Oh, there's just a lot of competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know if you meant, you know, competition-wise or, you know, time of year-wise and, you know, oh, it's near the Christmas season, yeah. So people are going
to
buy shit.
I'd be really interested to check it out because I've only played, like, the briefest of moments at a friend's console. Mm. So I would love to check out and see.
Yeah. More, but as far as this acquisition goes, like you said, a lot of people have already said the biggest concern is that in 3 years there won't be a Respawn.
Yeah.
I don't have the authority to comment on that. I mean, BioWare's still around, but I feel like BioWare is probably on thin ice at the moment, considering
Andromeda
kind of performed. Oh, yeah. And
happy Mass Effect 10 anniversary, 10-year anniversary, whatever.
Oh, is that this year?
Yeah, it was Mass Effect Day this week.
Oh, no, that was N7 Day.
N7 Day.
I don't know if that's actually tied to the release of any of the games, but N7, November 7th.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm so...
Whatever, it is still 10 years since the original Mass Effect came out. So, hey, well done, everyone.
Yep.
I guess. Why would I say well done, everyone?
It's weird. Yeah.
It's not like it's been 10 years and the community's been building churches or whatever in that time. Like,
it's always reminds me of, like, May the 4th.
Yeah.
As well, I'm like, I don't know.
The one that really gets me is Pi Day 3.14, because firstly, it only works if you're American.
Yeah.
And secondly, Pi is not to two decimal places. You know what I mean? Like, it's so arbitrary.
Yes, well, aren't all these days arbitrary?
Yeah. And what are you celebrating on Pi Day? Maths?
Yes.
I think it's just a day for people who are at that very specific tier where they want to perform nerddom. You know, those kind of people who are like, science, I love science. Science is great. Science. It's like, okay, cool. How's global warming work? Science!
That's true. And there are those people, but there's also people who care about math who are like, we need to get people talking about maths.
And I want to make, because I'm straying into fake nerd kind of territory.
Yes,
here.
It's not
about, oh, these people are coming into my community and I'm so much smarter than them. It's just, I sometimes am a little bit concerned that, like,
so, blinded science championeering?
Yeah, where people, they shout for that kind of stuff. Those are the kinds of people who will read a headline that says, studies show that chocolate cures cancer, and be like, science is great! You know, that's my concern, that the kinds of people who, as you say, championize science without taking the effort to immerse themselves in, at the very least, critical thinking. A lot of the people who perpetuate a lot of the myths about, like, homeopathy and shit like that, and actually do a lot of damage to people who need medicine, like real medicine, like medicine tested by the scientific method.
You know, vaguely important medicine.
Yeah.
Okay. That tangent aside, EA did a thing. We'll see what happens.
Like, we've already said this. We barely touched Titanfall. We might be more invested in it after we play more Titanfall. And
I will admit, I actually play a lot of the Titanfall phone game and quite enjoy it. And it's made by Respawn as well.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm not interested in any more phone games.
It's fun. For a phone game.
Yeah, I can't. I need to expose myself to as few of them as possible.
That's absolutely fair. Luckily, this one is not full of ads.
We actually didn't have a chance to talk about this, but very briefly.
Oh, no.
We might want to, because like we-
Off the script!
We're going off script here, but I'm just reminded that because we had the PAX episode, we've actually missed a fast cast. So something dropped about a month ago, and that was the Activision patent. I think it was Activision, right?
No, it was technically, it's Activision Blizzard.
Yes.
And Activision Blizzard dropped a patent. Encourage them to make microtransactions in games.
Yeah.
By using a matchmaking system to expose people to other players.
So, yeah, the idea, the core of the mechanic is that, like, John and I are playing a game.
Yep.
I've bought some sick-ass new armor. John hasn't bought any sick-ass new armor. We might get matched on the same team or opposing teams so that John sees me in my sick-ass new armor and is like, maybe I should buy that too.
Yep.
And, you know, sites like, you know, any web-based advertising does this kind of targeted advertising already.
Yeah.
But there's something particularly insidious about it, I think, in this way, when there's a competitive element. And, like, we won't go into it because it's, like I said, we're a month down the track and everybody's already said everything that needs to be said. It's not great.
No,
I don't like psychologically manipulative shit in my games. Yep. I don't like kids being exposed to this shit. Like, every single argument everybody's ever had about microtransactions or in-game gambling and all of that kind of stuff, I'm just basically, can we pay once and just own a thing?
I mean,
can we pay once, just own a thing, please? Capitalism, isn't that the whole point of you? Can I just pay once and own a thing, please?
There's hours and hour long podcast that I have in me to talk and rant about the different payment methods and how I feel about them. But
actually, just very briefly, Super Mario Odyssey has a whole bunch of different costumes and shit and stuff in it. No microtransactions. You earn that all just by playing the game. It sucks that I have to praise that in something, but it's another good thing about that game.
My favorite thing about League of Legends when we played it was that you could play it for free, but there were things you could buy that you could use in-game currency for, or you could use money to buy specific items, right? I have no problem with that, right? That's cool. But when they start to become randomized items, because as we know, Activision Blizzard, as with Overwatch and their new World War II shooter, Call of Duty World War II, both have randomized loot boxes. And when you make a microtransaction purchase, you're purchasing a randomized chance for something.
Yeah.
That's when I start to have problems.
I mean, there's a good extra credits episode on what they call Skinner box techniques. And that's this idea that you would think that if you're conditioning a person to do something, right? Let's say I push a button and a little chocolate comes out. And I go, ooh, a chocolate, and I eat it. And I push a button, a chocolate comes out. Ooh, a chocolate, and I eat it. You would think that the best way to condition someone is to have the chocolate come out every single time you push the button so that I'll perfectly associate it with it. But in truth, if you're trying to create compulsive behavior, randomization is much more effective than a consistent result.
Yep.
And so that's part of what these loot boxes are. The other thing too is, like you say, I can't just buy the one thing I want and have it.
Yep.
I have to buy again and again and again and again until I get it. I mean, there's the Destiny 2 example where you buy like dyes or whatever to color your uniforms in sets of three, but you have four slots, so you've got to buy at least two of them. Even if you like get the perfect random drop on your first run, you still have to buy more.
Yeah.
Because you won't get the full four slots that you need.
And to me, this randomness creates emotional drain because I have to stop myself every time. Even though for me personally, it's actually a really minor incentive. Like when I play Overwatch, the urge to buy loot boxes is very small for me.
Yeah.
Right? But I am just, my compulsions are in other areas.
And I think that it's something we always need to acknowledge about these compulsions, because I'm very similar. When I see, you know, things with microtransactions, whatever, constantly hitting me over the head, I'm more likely to put the game down than spend money on it.
Yes.
I think League of Legends was the last time I used a microtransaction on anything, and we played that, what, 8 years ago?
Yeah.
It was the last time you probably played that?
Yeah.
With these kinds of compulsions, I think it's also difficult to know if you're someone like me who has never smoked, for example, how hard it would be for me to give up smoking.
Yeah.
I don't know how addictive I would find that substance if I was... I know this sounds dumb, but like different people have different levels of compulsive behavior around different things.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of that can be judged before you are actually already in the danger zone.
That doesn't sound dumb at all. That sounds rather reasonable, David. Yeah. It's so, unknowable how...
I think there are some, a lot of people who either just because of their psychological makeup will never really be swayed by microtransactional manipulation, or they're people like me who have never fallen into that trap yet and so don't have to claw their way out of it.
Yep.
But I think it's very easy for a lot of us to say, well, you just don't buy it if you don't want it. Just don't buy it. That completely misses the point of what the psychological techniques are supposed to do. And like, just as a very basic example, in casinos, part of the reason you're surrounded by flashing lights is so you have trouble telling how much time has passed.
Yep.
Right?
That's why there's no windows.
That's why they're in most casinos, they try and limit how many windows you have. So you can't see, oh shit, it's dark. I guess I've been here for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Right? They want you to fall into that trance because they want to get as much money out of you as possible.
Yeah.
And these microtransactional tactics are the same. They want money out of you and they are doing their best to wear you down. And again, it's so easy to say, well, if you don't want it, just play something else or don't buy it. But some people are compulsive spenders. Some people don't have the cognitive faculties of someone like me because they might be kids or, you know, have a different cognitive condition to me. Like,
yeah, we all have our own strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, people are being preyed on. And these are psychological tactics. It's psychological warfare, for want of a less inflammatory term.
And look, I don't want to not pay for these things, but if you're building a game that has to prey on people to be sustainable, that's just gross.
It is.
And it discourages me from buying these games.
And that's part of, like, when we talk about the success of a game like Senua's Sacrifice, right, that is this completely, not completely new, but a very different pricing model to what we're used to, kind of comes in at a different tier that supports itself without these kind of microtransactions and whatever, and doesn't require the huge over-the-top budgets that, you know, these are lies, but people say require, you know, the microtransaction and the season passes and all that kind of thing. Because, oh, the game's just so expensive to make, it's so crazy expensive. What I'm trying to say here is, like, when you have a game like Hellblade, it's hopeful for more than the fact that it's just like, oh, wow, $40 instead of $60. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's more about, oh, this game is coming in at a totally different tier, and we might see people who are just exhausted by this microtransactional bullshit actually have an option to get into a game and just have it.
Yeah.
I will say that I retweeted something on Twitter very recently about, you know, the exploitative practices of pricing and stuff in gaming, how it is still true that games are super expensive to make.
Yeah.
Like, there is truth to that, and especially for a lot of smaller projects, pricing is difficult. So I don't want to make it sound like I'm dismissing that out of hand.
No,
but I think that this is a negative feedback loop. If we're making games super expensive and we're monetizing them in a way that is going to support that high expense, that problem is not going to solve itself unless we fix it. You know what I mean? We have to fully interrupt that cycle.
Otherwise, it's just going to keep pushing people who can't afford to participate out of the system.
Yeah.
And then that's just going to make...
That's the other thing that's fucked up as well. Like, with a typical game, everybody spends $10 or everybody spends $30 or everybody spends $60. With a microtransactional game, there are certain people who are spending $500 and then a bunch of people like me who are spending nothing.
As someone who plays a lot of phone games, for example, you can feel it most strongly there where you hit that wall where everyone else is paying money or they've spent an eternity playing.
Yeah.
And the game is just, it feels broken at that point.
And this is why I feel the need to stay away from mobile games, which I think is how we segued onto this topic.
Yep.
For me, so many of them follow that model. And it is a matter of psychological wear. If I get to this point where it's like, I can't keep playing this game that I kind of want to keep playing because then maybe there's a fun central mechanic or maybe there's just a compelling or a compulsive central mechanic. And I hit that wall where I'm like, I have to pay. I stop playing that game in the worst way possible.
Yeah, true.
I stopped playing that game kind of still wanting to, but kind of hating the fact that I can't, and also kind of hating myself for wanting to, and also kind of hating myself for not seeing it coming. You know, I'm just angry at myself and I'm angry at the game. It's just a shitty way to end things,
you know? Yeah, you're not putting it down because you feel like this is a natural stop.
Yeah, and that's my problem with most mobile games that follow this mechanic. It's just I end up at a net loss in terms of emotional satisfaction. Anyway, that was me forcing that topic down everybody's throat. Did you want to talk about cool, awesome games that don't do exploitative shit?
So I wanted to talk about a game that was shared to us by a listener, Alex, and that game is called This Boy is a Monster.
Yes. Now, that's a very cool game. Monster is spelt without an E.
Yes.
And the reasons why will become beautifully apparent as John continues to explain.
Yeah. Now, this game is about playing as a trans man and basically exploring a dating world via Monster.
Monster, which is a dating app for, what's the word? It's a fancy word for it. Whatever. But men who are attracted to men.
Exactly. And it's told from the first person perspective. You know, you play the character.
Which, like, that's super interesting because most Twine games or text adventure games are second person. You do this, you look around, you see a house.
Yeah.
Very occasionally I'll see third person ones, which makes sense to me because it feels like, but when it's first person, I do this, I do that. I don't know. There's something that just doesn't quite click when it's was typically a second person narrative structure, which is so rare that those exist at all.
Yeah, I get what you mean. And really, the game doesn't have what I would call a lot of interactive range.
Okay.
Although what it does have there, I find really interesting.
Yeah, see, I played the first literally like 60 seconds of this because I think you sent it to me. I pulled it up on my laptop, but I was in the middle of some other work. I was like, oh, this seems cool. I'll play this later. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance yet.
Yeah.
But there's a point, like the first thing you're doing is you log on to Monster and look through some of the messages you've gotten.
Yep.
And you've got a range here that aren't great.
Yes.
As far as all of that goes.
It's basically a bunch of terrible messages that someone might get on a dating site.
Yeah. Well, specifically a trans person might get on a dating site because like one person reacts with disgust after you've clearly just told them that you are trans. Someone else,
The opposite of disgust.
Yeah. Someone else is fetishizing you, obviously.
Yes.
And, I had that response and I was like, you get your actions to take there are delete or respond.
Yeah.
And the response is dictated. Like, you don't get to choose the tenor of your response or the tone of your response.
Yeah.
So the interactivity isn't as broad as you might necessarily expect.
No.
But I haven't played the whole game, and I imagine that part of the reason is because they are trying to convey a particular character who is reacting to these things.
Yeah, this is a game that anyone can play. You just jump in the link, which we'll share, and you can just experience it firsthand. And I don't want to spoil any more of it, to be honest. But I just wanted to say that I found it to be a really affecting experience.
Mm.
And when I played it, I felt like I really empathized with the character.
Have you played Acceptance, the Laura Dale game?
No, but I probably should.
Yeah, see, that's another one there should probably be an episode for stuff like this. But, like, that's another game that I've had in my Steam library for ages that I just haven't sat down to play.
Yeah.
And this, God, this is such a white privileged thing to say.
Great. Put it
but
in.
This is such a privileged thing to say, but part of the reason when I sit down and think maybe I should play this, I know that it's going to be depressing to some extent.
Yeah. Okay.
And the thing is, I then utilize my cis privilege and just choose to not engage with that topic, I guess.
Oh, right.
Right. Yeah. So, like, it's one of these things, like, I read a lot of stuff about, you know, people and their particular experiences and certain prejudices that, you know, hey, this is something that a lot of cis people do wrong and they should know about. Like, that kind of stuff. I like to read that because I feel, I'm not quite sure. Maybe it's just because it's a little bit more detached.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, like, to actually immerse myself in a game, I think one of the biggest powers of games is that they create a greater sense of connection to the character, like you said. And I think maybe I find that intimidating. I don't know.
I mean, those messages at the start are a perfect example of the kind of emotions that this game can inflict.
Yeah.
You know, when you see someone react with revulsion or fetishizing you and that kind of stuff, and the uncomfortableness you can feel is a testament to the whole narrative experience. Mm. So while I would say that it's overly or positive and really interesting, and I would definitely recommend everybody to play it if you've got the time, I can understand why there's that on some sort of level. There's a need for emotional energy that you need to.
Yeah,
you know,
that's part of it. But as I'm sitting here and thinking now, I think another thing is that when I read an article that someone has written, there's something immutable about that.
Yep.
That is, there's something about it where it's like I can absorb this and I can listen to a person talk.
Yeah.
And I feel like that method of absorption doesn't feel quite so alien as me occupying the perspective of a person. And like, I was thinking about this because you were talking about the limited, level of like player agency. Me as a cis dude picking responses isn't necessarily, you know what I'm trying to say here? If you put me in the same situation as a trans person, yep. I'm not going to react the same way to certain kinds of transphobia because I'm not trans.
Sure.
Right? My experience of dealing with that is different. And so by limiting player agency in the game, I think that that's a good step to, you know, make sure that if you get a person who is kind of ignorant to what it feels like, who's not aware of what it feels like to be discriminated against, them just taking the high road every time and just being like, yeah, obviously I just take the high road every time. Oh, yeah. Right? Like, that's just the easiest thing in the world.
Water off my back.
Like,
how would this affect anyone? Yeah.
I don't need to care about this guy. He's just some dude saying words. Yeah, because you only have to deal with it for the 15 minutes it takes you to play this game.
And I think the text itself, the game, because of the options it gives you, it really affects on you the emotional state and the feelings of someone going through that.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, like, I found it a really affecting experience, and it was really short and really nice, and you can just play it.
Yeah, I'll give it a go. And like, cause this and Acceptance both, I really should. And I'm just trying to figure, like, why I haven't yet is my problem. And so I'll solve that off air.
There's a whole bunch of things we do, especially with what I would call, what I categorize under the being a better person things.
Yeah.
It's like, for example, I know very little about political systems and yet I want to change them, right? That's, you can't do that. You can't change something you don't know anything about.
Yeah.
Or you do it badly.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. For example, this is a reminder that I need to explore more people's experiences because I feel like I've been lacking in that.
Yeah. And that, like I said, I will endeavor to improve. Ladies and gentlemen, please don't follow my lead. Expose yourself to as much minority art as possible.
But this was a game by Sav Ferguson. He made a wonderful game. So
excellent.
It was great.
What else do we have? Okay, so we have some depressing news here.
Yep.
So Telltale Games have laid off about 25% of their workforce, amounting to about 90 people.
Yes.
There's a statement out there about how they're looking to focus on fewer, higher quality games. They've also made a comment about addressing one of the major criticisms against Telltale Games is that the technology they use is very dated.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, yes and no. Like, I don't really think that's the point of Telltale Games, but that's just me. Apparently, it's a pretty big criticism.
The problem when people say the technology is dated is a lot of people experience engine issues and bugs and the game crashing.
Right.
And it comes up because there's so many of these games. Telltale releases a lot of games, and they have at least recently. And as they said, this is one of the reasons for why they want to pull back a little. Feels really obvious.
It is, yeah. And the thing is, like, a statement like this, anytime I hear a corporate entity make any kind of declaration, and obviously this would have been a representative of that corporate entity, but anytime I hear anything about, hey, this is why we made this business decision, you really always have to take that with a grain of salt.
Yep.
I do, this seems logical to me. It lines up with feelings I've had about Telltale in the past. I can't even really point to specific examples of why, but I have felt that they must be stretched thin for a while.
The reason why I included that reference that, you know, they wanted to focus on fewer games is it's like, I feel like that's what everyone was telling them to do. Everyone was like, guys, so many games, focus. Yeah,
I think it's interesting because when you have episodic products, and Telltale, in fairness, for the most part, do episodic well. I mean, I had to wait a really fucking long time for some, I think, Tales of the Borderlands games. There was a huge gap in the middle there because they focused on other projects.
I just embraced the full slowpoke method of waiting
just
until
chilling
it's
out. Yeah.
All done.
I think Guardians of the Galaxy has its final or second to final episode released alongside this announcement. So they released two episodes of two separate series.
Yeah.
In time with this announcement that, you know, 90 people are disappearing from their company.
Yeah, which is sad, by the way.
Yeah, and it is. Like, it always sucks when anyone loses a job, right? Mm-hmm. Unless they have definitely proven that they don't deserve it. Trump! And when anybody loses a source of income, that's a shame.
Yeah.
And especially in game dev, I don't know, I'm under the impression that there's not a lot of job security in that field on the whole.
It does not seem like it at
there's
all.
There's also, like, crunch is just, like, to worst. And there's
Animation as well. It's just like, I don't know how people can cope with crunch and how that can be a sustainable thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit that a lot of folks have to put up with in the games industry. And, you know, having 90 people have to scramble for new work is another shit thing that workforce has to deal with.
Yep.
But in all honesty, as generic and empty as this statement may seem, I do kind of hope the best for everyone. I hope that Telltale makes fewer games that are better and the company is improved because of it. I hope that a lot of these other people who have been let go from Telltale find work because, again, when they say it's not because these people are unskilled, it's because of the economic state of our company. I believe that, you know, like, I want to believe it at the very least. Grain of salt. Yeah, I mean, hopefully things work out.
Yeah. We'll see. The final thing that I think I want to say briefly is, even though we've just complained about loot boxes and everything, I do want to mention that Overwatch is having a free weekend next weekend.
Yes.
Where you can trial and play the game.
Yeah. If I may throw in my 2 cents, please do not throw in your 2 cents to the microtransactional box. The game is awesome fun without any spending whatsoever.
This is true.
It's all cosmetic, and that doesn't alleviate the fact that it's psychologically manipulative, but you don't need it, is what I'm trying to say.
But if you want to jump in and have a play, maybe get one of your favorite Slowpokes, Slowpoke number one here, to play with you.
You should totally hit us up on Overwatch, right?
You do?
Yeah.
All right. Maybe hit us, both of us up then. We can all play together.
Yeah, I could use more work. What am I trying to say here? I could get more value out of the money I threw at that game, so.
Yep. Anyway.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it, right?
Yep. I think that's time to wrap up.
If you like what we do and want to find more of us, search for us on iTunes. You can subscribe, auto-downloads. It looks good for us and makes us feel good.
Yes,
so that's great. If you want to check out our website, that's slowpokespodcast.com, where you can find links to everything else.
Yep.
Facebook is facebook.com/slowpokespodcast, and Twitter, where I reside, is at slowpokescast.
Yes. And you can talk to us on there. You can email us, do whatever you want. We're always eager to listen to your questions and other things.
All right.
Now, just quickly, before we go, our next game will be Kane and Lynch.
Yes. All right. So, we have already played and recorded that episode.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
It is very interesting to talk about a game like that.
Not to toot our own horn.
Yeah, well, I don't even so much mean that, you know, you and I are interesting to listen to. I mean that game is just an incredibly interesting topic of conversation. Yep. There is nothing like it that we've covered for the podcast.
Definitely not.
And that makes it perhaps sound less predictable than it is, but it is genuinely unique in a way that you wouldn't consider a B-grade shooter to be.
Yeah.
So tune in for that, because I'm quite happy with that conversation.
I was so nervous going into that, and it turned out to be rather fun. So.
Yeah, no, it's like, that was a game that John insisted had to be on the list, and I am very glad that he did, because I would not have touched that if not for this show, and I have gained a greater appreciation for the scope of our medium because of it. So join us for that if that's the kind of thing that you're into.
Yep.
Thanks once again for joining us. I've been David.
I've been John.
Have a great gaming time.
Woohoo!